Morning, folks. It sure is wonderful for Elaine and I to be here with you today and this weekend. There's been a lot of conversation this morning already about circuit riders, and I am not one. I think in a period of almost 18 years, this is the fifth such meeting that Elaine and I, or myself alone, have been able to get to, or maybe it's the fifth we've been invited to. Thank you, Clarence. I noticed, looking over the program, that of the three alcoholics on it, there was one from the central provinces of Canada, one on the western coast of the United States, and I'm the southern representative. In case there's some confusion due to some of the things I've already said, this should be understandable to us all, since confusion to an alcoholic is something we're all living with all the time. You know, they used to say that that Christopher Columbus was probably an alcoholic. He left from Spain and he went somewhere. He didn't know exactly where he was going. When he got there, he didn't know where he had arrived at. And he couldn't really tell anybody exactly how he'd gotten there. And then, of course, to top it all, he was financed by a woman. I think I got something in common with him. I was in my native New England a couple of years ago on a vacation and went to a meeting and had a chance to participate for a very few minutes. And I learned two things. I made a statement that I, like every other alcoholic I have ever heard, came from a good family. A young lady got up right after me and told me in these words that we'll tell this damn southerner that this isn't so true because I didn't come from a good family. And she told me two other things, that basically when I came back to my adopted state of Georgia, that I was a damn Yankee, and when I went home to my native New England, I was a damn southerner. And I understand that because I'm an alcoholic, and my life was unmanageable. To be here at a meeting like this with all you folks, to share with you over coffee, and in the real fine part of the program that is to come, is truly inspirational. I think as an active alcoholic, I was strictly a creature of emotions. And I think that as a recovering alcoholic, I am still that creature of emotion. There is some difference as an active alcoholic. I knew firsthand resentment and fear and hatred and inordinate selfishness. And as a recovering alcoholic, I have had some touch of the emotions of love, of mercy, of kindness, of charity. And maybe in a very few words, that tells what I am working on. I love to drink booze. I love the taste of it. I love the places it was served. But most of all, maybe you alcoholics remember, I love the feeling that I got from booze. At the age of 15 or 16, in my native New England, with a foot on a barroom rail, talking over, I thought, with some wisdom, the problems and the solutions for those problems in those days with older folks, 17 or 18. Sometimes I think that by staying close to AA, amongst the many benefits and dividends that I receive in such great amount, is a resurgence of that good feeling the next morning after an AA meeting. I can get pretty loused up in my thinking, like maybe one or two of you others can at times. Go into an AA meeting, maybe not being able to put my finger exactly on what was said specifically that helped. But waking up the next morning as clear as a bell. I sought for many years to get back that good feeling in drinking booze. And I was unsuccessful, as you know, for I was an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. But I keep getting that good feeling in Alcoholics Anonymous, in working this program, and particularly going to the meetings, so that I'm able to get the rededication, the re-inspiration that is so important to me as a recovering alcoholic. I love to drink. I love the taste of it. I thought for many years that I drank pretty well. The longer I am sober in this program, the further I get away from that last drink, the more I know I never drank sociably at all. I remember hearing this doctor at the AA convention in Atlanta a couple of 3 years ago. One of us, also a medical man, evidently had done a lot of research other than the usual kind that alcoholics do since he had gotten sober, saying that it was his judgment and his opinion that about a third of the alcoholics seem to become alcoholic almost from the very beginning, and maybe two-thirds or 70% of them become alcoholics over a period of time. At that time, I had been on this program on a daily basis without a drink or a substitute for a drink for about 15 years. And I got a tremendous feeling of understanding. I realized then that I was an alcoholic from the very beginning. I should have known this, I suppose. For the first time that I really count that I drank at all, I can remember it as if it were yesterday. And it was about 30 years ago. Around a campfire in my native New England, with a bunch of older boys, 16 or 17, and a bottle of wine being passed around, and maybe another one or two, and I got drunk. I operated around the campfire, I was told, the next day without remembering it. And so I really blacked out. And needless to say, I passed out also. And the very next morning, never having been drunk before, somehow I knew that a glass or a bottle of cold beer would help. And I never drank again. From that time on, until I drank again in the morning. To start that at 15, and then to be able to tell myself over the years in this program that I drank fairly sociably, even today is a source of wonder to me. I went at booze like I went at everything, all the way. And by the time I was 17 or 18, instead of having girls, athletics, and maybe an education in that order, in reality, getting drunk, drinking, this was number one. Starting to wake up in jails and not knowing how I got there. Becoming estranged not only from my family, but my friends. winding up in deep and serious trouble from time to time. Having the usual luck, fortune, whatever you call, not winding up in the kind of trouble that so many alcoholics wind up in. But in deep trouble, and even at times, recognizing it and wanting to do something about it before I was 20 years old. That wise and wonderful lady who shared with us such a wonderful message last night talked about the forgetter. And as an alcoholic, I have a great forgetter too. And maybe you who are alcoholics have one also. It's a different kind of a forgetter. It's the ability to forget the horror, the heartache, the failure, and the defeat that goes with active alcoholism very quickly. Winding up eventually in college, and that's a long story, and in the service, and finally coming back with a life ahead of me. The only problem was that I was a very sick alcoholic, and I was only 23 or 24 years old. This is an insidious, progressive disease. We hear it in AA. We look at our own records, and I look at mine, and nothing could be truer. From the young fellow, 16 or 17, going out and getting drunk once in a while. By the time he was 22 overseas, this type of activity was developing. I was in the United States Marine Corps, in their most popular and well-regarded rank. It was a PFC. And it really was a popular and a well-regarded rank. But we would hear that the Seabees had brought some booze in for the officers on islands like Saipan and Tinian. And I was not a brave person then. And I'm not a brave person this morning. Foolish, maybe, but not brave. And we would hear, and I would take my little carbine, and I would go across that island to see if I couldn't, and usually could, get some of that booze. In those days, Saipan was considered by the United States Marine Corps as secured. The folks in the United States were told it was secured. That was supposed to mean we had it under control. And we did. That did not count, however, the 20,000 Japs in the caves and in the holds. But I would go and get that booze, because booze was important to me. Coming home right after the bombs dropped, being paid off on the West Coast, having plenty of money, air transportation back to my native New England, and my family, who I hadn't seen in almost 3 years, I decided to take a little slower trip across this great country of ours. I felt that I, and I say this facetiously, who had fought so long, so hard, and so well for our country, should at least have the opportunity to leisurely go across this wonderful, great land of ours. You who are alcoholics, and you who are attached to alcoholics, know that what I had in mind. As another step in my progressive alcoholism, with two of my contemporaries, we landed in Reno, Nevada the first night. Two of my contemporaries, other Marines such as myself, except in one instance. Evidently, they were not alcoholics. Because after 3 hours in Reno, I don't know what happened to them. Staying in that lovely town, a great town for an active alcoholic with money or credit or a combination of both that's open 24 hours a day, I stood before the same judge four of those 5 mornings. And this is the way it was going. Fortunately, the war was over, And he ended up putting me on a train for Omaha, Nebraska with one of his deputies. Seems like alcoholics are great for getting in a difficulty and pretty good for getting out of it. Maybe it's because we have a lot of practice. Finally arriving home about 2 months later, and instead of that bronze, strong, healthy American Marine, I was shaking and shivering from a 2 month drunk. And within 2 weeks, I was in my first hospital for alcoholics. And I was about 24. For the first time since I was 15 years old, I had a period of sobriety. I went into this hospital. It was called the Washingtonian. And the proprietor there also sold a cure for alcoholism that I'm sure you'll all be interested in knowing about. I know I was. It was called the Seattle Cure. And it sounded pretty good. I knew I had to do something about my drinking. I knew that I was in trouble. I could begin to faintly hear the knock of doom. And he told me that he wanted to know what kind of alcohol I drank. What were my favorite drinks? And he got the long list that any respectable alcoholic would give anyone who ever asked him that. The only difficulty is that he also wanted you to drink a large glass of warm water after a shot of Efficac in the arm. And as a result, after 10 days of that, I was thoroughly drained out. The idea being that I would be so repulsed with the thought of any of these drinks that I would never drink again. I wouldn't recommend anybody considering such a treatment, but anybody over the age of 25 would be insane to, because I almost died from it. I did stay sober, though, several months. They say activity for an alcoholic is good. I was finishing up my college career. It was the third time I'd been to the same college, but these wars and so on had helped me get over the hump. I had 3 shots at it, and I made it the third time. I was playing baseball on the varsity ball club, and I was working in my family's business, and I was sleeping about 4 hours a day. But I got that degree in June, and I forgot all about the Epicac, and I forgot all about the cure, and I forgot all about anything because I took a drink, and I was gone again. Within 6 months, I was out of a family business that would have taken care of me the rest of my natural life. And then I took the second great cure that I took, a geographical cure. I felt that since the pressure was so tough around home, since I had made such a mess of things, although I didn't recognize that, I was well introduced in a little town out in Kansas. My landlady was the lady from whose boarding house sprung the chief of police and the mayor of that town. She was sort of an institution. She was a wonderful lady. She's gone now, but we corresponded and got cards for many, many years. And I can still see the look of wonderment in her eyes as she would look at me. Within 2 months, she came to me one day after many arrests, after much difficulty, and said that she had made a pact with her former boarder, the judge, that if I would get out of town and go back east that afternoon, they wouldn't lock me up. And so I came back to my native New England, got a little job, got another, and got another. I became a wandering drunk in the city of Austin. After one particularly disastrous time, I ended up in a hospital for the mentally ill. I think it was called the Boston Psychopathic, and I think I was in for 30 days observation. Not because I was crazy or anything like that, you know. The because I was an active alcoholic, and my life had become completely unmanageable. When I woke up after having the paraldehyde wear off that I was drinking in those days, and realized where I was, I became the most active and the most sane person in that hospital. I installed myself as assistant to the chief nurse. I organized the cleanup squads and the mop-up details. And you all know what happened in 30 days. I was released in good health. But I was shook. For the first time, I looked around. And in my conversations with some of the folks who were not as sick as others, it began to be clear to me that some of these people had had a drinking problem along the way. I was without booze or paraldehyde for a period of about 25 or 30 days, and I was shook. I had heard about Alcoholics Anonymous. I had heard some unusual things about Alcoholics Anonymous. I had heard that they taught people how to drink without trouble. I had heard that they had secret meetings in which they were able to drink, but then they suddenly were sober. But one thing I did recognize, that they seemed to not have the difficulty that I had. I never in God's world felt or realized or thought out that this was a program of total sobriety on a daily basis to the end of time. But I wanted to do something about my drinking. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know how I did, but I did get a little job. And I got a room on the third floor over the AA clubhouse on Newbury Street in Boston. And I started to go to meetings every night in the week. And two or three things became very clear to me. Number one, these people were sober. And number two, these people were happy. They were relaxed. They were feeling good. And thirdly, these people had been drunks. This was brought home very clear to me. Maybe too clear for a young 25-year-old 20 years ago in AA in Greater Boston. For after I started feeling better, started to build up my health, started to get a couple of paychecks of $30 a week, I began to realize that maybe I wasn't so bad after all. That was that forgetter, Elsie, that I'm talking about. I heard of these folks who had been arrested 100 and 110 times. And I'd only been arrested at that point 20 or 25. I heard of these folks who had been in Dropkick Murphy's, one of the local drying out places, 30 and 40 times, and I'd only been there 4 or 5. I saw lots of folks who had been in Bridgie, and Bridgewater is the similar to Milledgeville in Georgia, where the real sick, down-and-out drunks end up, and I hadn't been there at all. And then I recall reading that the seers of those days on alcoholism, the people who were supposed to have known something about it, the people who were writing about it. I picked up little things like this: if you're under 30, you haven't gone far enough. If you're employable, it's doubtful if you can make the transition and pay the price of the total attitude change needed in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so one day, after about 3 months, I came home to my little room, and I took off my one good suit, and I took my $30 that I had gotten paid, and I somehow, for some reason, put 20 under some shirts and a drawer, and I put on a pair of khaki pants and a sports shirt. It was in June of the year. And I like to say I sallied forth. To have a beer. I hadn't drank beer in years. But in no time at all, I was drunk. I was very thinly financed, but that was never a great problem. And I had the 24 months in which there was not a month that I was not in some kind of an institution that would have taken an alcoholic. I also, at this time and point in life, got what is called, we used to call, the silver cure. The silver cure is when all your credit and sources of credit are advised by the big source of the credit that no further credit is to be extended except at the creditor's risk. In other words, I was shut off. There was no dough. It was a terrible 24 months for me. From the young man who came from a good family, who was given a normal help and motivation, who had been given a good education, that somehow who had served his country and gotten an honorable discharge in spite of all this, whose life was really should be about to begin, was in reality at the end of the rope. For I wound up in Greater Boston a nickel and dime bum in the south end of Boston. This is an insidious and a progressive disease. And I guess it tells it all when near the end, I can remember this as if it were yesterday. Seeing a man who I had been in some of the higher-priced gingerbread houses in the old days, and going up to him and asking him for a temporary loan of $50, I can still see the pity in his eyes as he looked at me and said, "No, you're not a $50 guy. Here's a half a buck." And this because, not because I was a wise guy, although I certainly was that in the early days. Not because I was a criminal. Not because I had full responsibility for my actions, for I did not. But this is what happened in 12 years to a person who just became an alcoholic. Naturally, anything I say here is my own opinion. I speak for no one, not even my wife. Maybe I should say particularly not my wife. But I feel that I was an alcoholic in every sense of the word. Sick in the mind, the body, and the soul. Completely and utterly gone and ill. With no hope whatsoever for any kind of a life and no hope for even any freedom in this life. And I remembered the happiness of 2 years before. And I remembered the drunks in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remembered the relaxation or serenity that I saw. And it didn't make any difference that I hadn't reached 100 arrests. It didn't make any difference that I hadn't been in these various places 50 or 60 times like some of them. The only thing that mattered was that I knew where I lived, that I was a hopeless and a helpless drunk, and that I was gone, and there was only a faint glimmer and shadow of hope in my mind, that I could get into Alcoholics Anonymous again and have a chance at all. And I came to AA on my hands and my knees. And I wanted to know, what do you do? How do I get sober? And these men, God bless them, it was a men's group in a small suburb of Boston. These men said, Joe, we've got a program. We got two. We got a way. We're not going to tell you what to do. We're not going to tell you how to do it. But we're going to share this program and these tools with you. They said, Joe, this is working for us. I can never forget, after being dry in AA a few months, a year, of asking one of the men who had been so helpful to me in those early days, what can I ever do? But thank you. What can I do for this miracle? And I'll always remember what he said. Go out, Joe, and live the AA program. Do what you can do and what you're asked to do. They said they had these tools. They said that this was a simple program. It was not an easy program, but it was a simple one. They said they asked for help on a daily basis to be sober and to do God's will as they understood it. They said they asked for this help from a power greater than themselves that most of them call God, but they determined who it was and how it worked. They said it wasn't a Protestant God or a Catholic God or a Baptist God or any other kind. It was their God, their understanding. They said at night they thanked the God of their understanding for a day's sobriety. They told me that in the early days and weeks and months, and maybe years, that the time would come when I would go out to take a drink. And they said this was one of the great miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous. That in AA, there was a defense against that first drink. They said that defense was an additional, simple plea for help from a power greater than themselves not to take that drink. 3 times in the first year, I came back to AA. I went out of my home to get a drink. And 3 times, I did not take that drink. I did not take that drink because I followed their advice. I asked God weekly, W-E-A-K-L-Y, to help me not to take that drink on those 3 occasions. And something happened and I didn't take it. They said they had a program of 12 steps. A program that had been put together by the first folks in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was in our book that had been put together by the first 100 members of AA. They said it was a program of progress. They said it was a positive, dynamic, living program that they had found, to the extent they worked it to the best of their ability, that the need to drink seemed to go. They said it was a program that was helping them grow and live again. But they emphasized that times would come when I would fall, not necessarily taking a drink or a substitute for a drink. They said that it was a program of progress, not perfection. But they said it worked. It was flexible. And then they told me they had a book that had been put together by the first 100 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. A book in which only one word has been changed over the years. A book that not only shares various experiences of that the first few alcoholics, so that I could have an opportunity, as if I needed it, to identify myself as an alcoholic. But what was more important than the first 100 pages? There was a blueprint, a guide, a framework for living this program. I can remember getting to the step, that the amends step, of getting in the car and driving 50 miles to see a guy that I had called a name to. If you could only have seen me, confused but determined, willing to do anything in the world to latch onto this thing and to get sober and to start my life at 27. And then they said I would have the opportunity for maybe the greatest privilege that any man or woman can have in this life. They said I would have the opportunity to see people come into this program after me. People beaten and broken and alone and defeated and completely gone like I was. And to see these people grow into normal, reasonable people again. To see people reborn in every sense of the word. Those folks in those days could have told me anything. They could have advised me in any direction. But you know, and I know, they told this sick drunk the truth. And I still ask myself time after time, when I begin to realize the enormity of the opportunity that I, as a recovering member of Alcoholics Anonymous, have. How can I ever thank him? And I guess the old answer that the old fellow gave me years ago, do the best you can to live this program and be available for any service you can be asked to give. I am an alcoholic, a creature of emotions. Resentment, fear, anxiety, hatred, selfishness. I know them well. And they kept me drunk for many years. And here in Alcoholics Anonymous, love and mercy and kindness and charity. And maybe this is the whole story. Maybe this points the answer to what I'm trying to do. On this wonderful, beautiful morning in these Tennessee mountains is one of the great experiences of my life in Alcoholics Anonymous to be with you. And being that creature of emotions that I am, my heart is full with gratitude and with an unlimited faith in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to be able to tell you in my own words what I mean. The kind of gratitude I'm talking about, that gratitude that comes only from receiving something that in God's world you never expected to receive. And that unlimited faith that we used to have in a bottle that it would get us over a tough night. That's the kind of faith I'm talking about. I have that faith in you and in Alcoholics Anonymous. And in closing, I'd like to share with you my favorite AA story that tells you about that faith and that gratitude. There was this sick drunk in a small town outside of Boston. He'd been gone for 5, 6, 7 weeks. He was broke. He was tapped out. He was about to go into the horrors. He couldn't get a drink, beg, borrow, steal one if he had to, and his life would depend on it. About 9:15, just before the last drugstore was going to close. Young guy spotted him across the street that he used to drink with him, was in AA, shot into the drugstore, he came out, and he got a little half pint and took it to the sick drunk, and they went down the alley, and the sick drunk sort of hugged it, maybe like a mother with a baby. He knew he had that pint. He didn't try to rip it open. He was all set now. He could get over the night with that drink. He looked at his benefactor, and the tears started coming down his eyes, and he says, God is good. For he had that gratitude of receiving something that he never in God's world expected to receive. And he had that faith in that bottle that it would get him over the night. I never in God's world, my beloved AAs, thought that I would ever live in the mind, be sober on a daily basis in the framework of this program for almost 18 years. And I can only close my small part of this program in echoing the words of that sick drunk. For you are Alcoholics Anonymous to me this morning. God is good. He has been very good to me, a sick drunk. And he will be very good to you if you let him. Good luck, and God bless you all.